And let's see, is Brad here? I see, well, he's signed in. He's not on his video yet.
I'm here, Mayor.
All righty. Well, it's 7 o'clock and I'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. Thank you all for everybody for joining us. First up, we're gonna have an invocation tonight from Mr. Richardson. So if you'll take it away, Brad.
Sure, join me in prayer, folks. Father, we're just one of thousands of towns across our country gathering tonight to do business of our town. As many of them, Father, we'll pause and just give return thanks to you for the day, for the blessings of our life. And we'll pause tonight and ask for wisdom for the issues that face us together as a town. We thank you for all you do for us each day. And we ask these things in Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. All right, if y'all please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag, of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, Aaron. All righty. Next, I know we have a lot of people have signed in. So we have our public comment period now, which is each person that wishes to speak on any topic can speak for 3 minutes. And then because we don't have any public hearings on any of the agenda items tonight, so this will be your time to talk if you want to address any topic or anyone's on the agenda tonight. So if you wish to speak, Aaron Nichols will be able to guide us through getting you your microphone live. So, Aaron, could you give him the instructions?
Yes, at this time, I have unmuted everyone. If you would like to speak and give public comment, please say your name and the mayor will recognize you as you come up and you'll have 3 minutes to speak.
Okay, I'd like to speak. My name is Hans Biekwalder. I live at 2407 Flagstick Drive. We purchased our home in December of 2012. And at that point, there were no fence on the golf course, no noise. And it was only after about 3 years, 3-4 years, that they started installing the fence. And the problem is that we have one next to our house, and it's only 135 feet away from our house. And it makes a tremendous noise. Record, you know, and I've complained several number of times to the management of the golf course, and they always said they were going to do something and take care of it, but nothing ever happens. So finally, I contacted the city and I spoke to Colleen, and Colleen said, came out and measured the sound, and she told them they had to shut it off, they couldn't have that sound. And so, but then there was apparently a meeting in October 2019 that we weren't aware of, that they changed it so that the fans could go 24 hours a day as needed. Now, there's also another thing that was in there, which I wasn't aware of. I just found that out, that they're not supposed to be within 300 feet of a residence. Well, the fan next to our house is 135 feet away from our house. So that's quite a problem, and I suggest that they shut it off until they or move it to the other side. If they're on hole three, we're at hole three, and they can move it to the other side where there are no residences there. That is my comment.
All right. Well, thank you, sir, for making us aware of that, and I'm glad you've contacted Colleen, and she'll give us a report on that through the town manager, so and then we'll take the appropriate action. So thank you, sir.
Yeah. I have even contacted the fan manufacturer to ask if these fans could be quieter, and they said they could not do nothing about it. It's the way they are.
All right. Thank you, sir. All righty. Anybody else next?
Hello, my name's Jim Demet, and I'm going to be a future resident of Stallings in the courtyards at Lawyers. and just wanted to say hello to everybody, but just to communicate that a lot of us are very concerned about the length of time that it's taken. And we appreciate you having it on the agenda today and appreciate this time.
Well, thank you, Jim. Appreciate, look forward to having you in Stallings. So, all right, next. All right, last call. Anybody like to make public comments? All righty. Well, we'll cut it off then. Aaron, if you could mute everybody, please. All right, next up is our agenda approval. What I'd like to recommend, I think we got a lot of people that are on the call for the EPCON discussion, including, you know, a couple of officials from EPCON. So I'd like to move them to number two slot and move the budget down to number five. Does anybody have any problems with that?
I'm good. Works for me.
Sounds good.
All right. And does anybody have anything they want to add to the agenda? All righty. Can I get a motion with those changes, please?
Make the motion to modify the agenda to move what is currently item number five, the EPCON courtyards at Lawyers Road, up to item number two, and move item number two, which is currently the 2021 budget amendment ordinance, down to item number five.
All right. Motion by Mr. Martin.
Second.
Second by David Shaw. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. All right. Opposed? All right. The ayes have it. So we'll go right on into the agenda. So I was the one that asked Alex and Aaron to put EPCON on the agenda, because talking to Alex, he told me they're close to issuing the permits to for the project to be completed through the process and start construction. And I just thought that in light of what made me think about this is what happened over at Twin Pines with the stormwater issue that John and Brad have seen. I don't know any other council member that has seen that. But, you know, it's a severe slope coming down from a neighborhood that was built afterwards, and it's causing, you know, severe stormwater issue. And we got this, and I don't think the slope is quite the same as what's going to be coming down from EPCON to Stevens Mill, but it's going to be, you know, severe, at least, you know, over 20 feet. And so I asked Alex to ask the engineers and talk to EPCON about how they're going to handle the stormwater, because hearing from residents in Stevens Mill, since they've started clearing some trees, that the stormwater has increased, the flooding has increased. Now, of course, EPCON will tell us tonight that, you know, and I agree with them, they hadn't put in the stormwater mitigation, you know, the drainage and things like that, and that'll help. But I just want some reassurance that all the I's have been dotted, T's have been crossed, and we're going to protect our, you know, our current residents, Stevens Mill, and they're going to be, informed of what's going on. So that's my reason. So I'll turn it over to Alex and Chris, if Chris Easterly's on here, that they can explain, and Bob and whoever else is here from EPCON can talk about the stormwater, what they're doing to make sure that, you know, the water is controlled.
Alex? Good evening, Mayor. Hey, Alex Sewell, the town manager. It's nice to see everyone this morning. It's always great when we have a lot of citizen engagement. So, Ms. Nichols, do you mind making me the host so I can pull up some information, please, ma'am?
Hey, Alex, just an FYI, buddy. We've got a pretty good storm rolling through Stallings right this minute. So just.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Yes, we do. I'm looking out the window.
So it's possible that we may lose folks.
Great. Thank you. All right. So. ask Mr. Easterly, our town engineer, I'll ask him to kind of walk us through the stormwater concerns as they relate to the border of the Stevens Mill subdivision, especially when it comes to the area surrounding the planned retaining wall. So, Mr. Easterly, could you help walk us through this? Chris, you're on mute.
Thank you. The town has received concerns for the Stevens Mill subdivision adjacent to the seven properties in the Epcon on Norris Road project that will have a two-tiered retaining wall. So in order to mitigate some of the surface and subsurface stormwater issues, basically two different systems will be implemented. One will catch surface stormwater and one will catch subsurface stormwater and basically channel that to the adjacent BMPs to mitigate those impacts. Can you go to the next slide, please, Mr. Sewell? This exhibit shows the seven properties in the courtyards at Lower Resort Project that will have a dual layer retaining wall. As you can see in this particular exhibit, in the blue channel area, there will be a swell that will be installed, also with yard inlets and a
subsurface. Mayor, is it just me if we lost sound from Chris?
It's just you, Brad.
Yeah, I can hear him.
Keep going, Chris. Thank you.
So as the front of the parcels kind of transverse to that rear, that swell that's identified there in the blue area will collect surface stormwater and direct it to drop inlets that's identified there in the little black rectangles. That will get into a subsystem that will get discharged into the BMP that's identified over on the right-hand side of the screen. In terms of subsurface drainage, that the taller retaining wall will have basically behind it, there'll be a 10-inch wide to 12-inch wide, once you get the shop drawings from the structural engineer, there will be a subsurface trench drain behind that wall that will collect subsurface water, and that will also direct it to the BMP, which will help mitigate any stormwater from entering the sites adjacent to the Stevens Mill subdivision or entering into the project buffer, the project boundary.
Hey, don't be out here, it's gonna rain. I'm doing a meeting. You need to go back inside, okay?
Oh, you got to muted Aaron.
Mr. Sewell will need to mute since he's the host now. Oh. I don't have that capability at this time.
All right.
Give me some.
Give me 1 second, please.
So between those two systems, stormwater runoff from the project site entering the Stevens Mill subdivision, those couple of properties would be mitigated. Is there any other questions I could hear from council?
So Chris, just layman's talk. You feel that the engineering here is sufficient, that there won't be waterfalls coming off this rise in the back of the Stevens Mill neighborhood, and there won't be pooling at the base of that hill because the water is being mitigated and moved over to the BMP. Is that a correct assessment?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
All right. This is Wyatt. Bob Curtis, are you on? Are you able to hear us?
Yes, I'm on, Mr.
Hey, Bob. How you doing? Appreciate y'all being here tonight.
Thanks for having us. What
was the reason for putting those couple of houses with a crawl space?
Well, originally, we had all those houses as slabs like we have in the rest of the community.
Right.
If you look at the exhibit above that's currently shown on the screen, there's two cross-sections. One is a cross-section of a slab house on the right-hand side, old X section is what it's listed as. And the other one to the left, the approved X section, is the crawl space. Originally, if you recall, Wyatt, we did not want to do crawls because it does not conform with our demographic and it adds steps.
Right.
But in this particular case, in working with staff, you'll notice the difference in the amount of grade drop. On the slab, there's much more significant grade drop from the back of the slab to the retaining wall versus on the crawl space cross section. You can see that it's much flatter and much more gentle slope because it's going through the grade of the house to that retaining wall. So on the request of staff, we accommodated that request and converted those six houses to crawl foundations.
All right, well, that makes sense. Thank you, Bob.
You're welcome.
Mayor Dunn, if I may, I think our planning director, Ms. Hare, could add on to Mr. Cardos's comments there when it comes to the reasons behind the crawl space, if you would find that appropriate at this time.
Sure.
Okay.
Thanks, Lynn.
So, Director Hare, do you mind kind of sharing with us the thoughts on the crawl space? Appreciate everyone's patience, by the way. I'm seeing a number of people getting kicked out, and then also I'm allowing them back into the conversation. So
take your time.
I'd be happy to address that issue. Alex, would you mind advancing to the next slide?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. One of the main reasons for crawl spaces is it does provide for a smooth grade transition between houses. Crawl spaces help promote this, and it also helps to reduce that slope that's behind those homes. It provides for more natural transition between these houses. Grading of the parcels is not as severe on lots when you're using crawl space construction. It works particularly well on sloped lots, which is what we're dealing with on these particular lots in this neighborhood. And they also work better with certain soil types. So those are just a few of the reasons, but I think the main reasons here is for the smooth grade transition and then the sloped lots. And then again, just on that, if you could advance one more slide, just to show you that cross section one more time. You can see with the crawl space, the slope is reduced greatly. You can also see that channel there that'll be carrying the stormwater to the BMP, and it just provides for a much smoother transition between the neighborhoods.
All right, thank you, Lynn.
You're welcome.
All right, Council, any questions for Chris, Alex, or Lynn? The other thing is, one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up was, you know, we had three council members that weren't on board when we approved this project. And this, you know, the project has taken a while and it's got a little bit of a, you know, a discussion among council. So I just wanted to try to get them up to speed as best as possible so they can be aware of what's going on in Stallings.
Mayor Dunn, would it be all right there, you know, on that same line of thought, one of the issues I think that came up that we heard a lot during the approval process and subsequently was the issue of kind of buffering between the existing neighborhood and the what would be this area, really the back of the homes.
Sure.
Would it be appropriate now to kind of share for our new council members some of the buffering requirements?
Yes.
Were met, might visually be able to kind of show that, because I know a lot of times when you're looking downwards at a plan, it can be kind of hard to visualize.
That'd be fine. Thanks, Alex.
Hey, Alex, before you go, can I ask one question about this one here? Did I hear that there's going to be like French drains or under like where those tree pitchers are that are basically run to the lake, or is it just that ditch or swell right there?
My understanding it will be both. There's a and I'll ask Mr. Easterly and Epcon, correct me where I'm wrong, but my understanding is that there'll be a swale And you can see it kind of emphasized here. In talking with our staff, I don't think that'll be that. It'll be more gradual in real life, but just to emphasize that I believe that's the case here. And there will be yard inlets as well, which are essentially drains to help kind of catch the flow and move it in the right direction over towards the BMP. In addition, there'll be an additional trench drain that would catch as kind of a backup, a secondary, to catch any additional water that makes it past those collection points.
Okay, and that would be where the quote unquote trees are in that picture. I'm just wondering where that would be at.
Mr. Easterly, can you help me with that, please?
Yes, it'll roughly be at that location where the taller tree is, closer to the bottom. The shop drawings would need to be done by a licensed professional engineer, structural engineer. So the actual location of that trench drain hasn't been designed as of yet. But okay. From a rough guesstimate, it'll roughly where that tree location is.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, Alex.
No, thank you for asking questions, council members. Appreciate it.
All right. Ask Chris. Chris, this is David. The lip of each, can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you, David.
These video meetings. Yeah, Chris, this is directed to you. The lips on each of these walls, is that high enough to keep spillover minimized? Or will it be? And I assume this is all part of your, you know, your job as an engineer to approve this, but I assume that's what you're going to make sure happens, that it flows underneath into the drainage and not flow over the top of each one of those ridges.
Yes, sir. And that'll also be reflected in the shop drawings that I get from the structural engineer.
Okay.
Because the zoning permit will have to be issued for that. So that's another set of reviews that would be done.
And Councilmember Shaw, I would add to that, one of the things Mr. Easterly has taught me through this process is that the advantages of the less steep slope crawl space design is that the velocity of the rain is going to be significantly lower. So when it makes it more able to kind of capture the rain as it comes down the building.
Okay. Chris, can I just ask again? I know we've focused on this one section of the project quite a bit in recent weeks, but as I recall from the original development agreement discussion, the stormwater issues that have existed in Stevens for a number of years will actually be improved with the enhanced storm plans that this community is providing. Is that
true? That's still correct. The pre and post development flows for all the return storm periods will be less. So the post development flows will be less than what the pre-construction flows will be,
right,
due to the on-site detention.
And then the other question I have is probably on the air. I know that this project has been delayed a number of times, and we have had emails recently from homeowners who have put down deposits, and one gentleman, it might actually be this Mr. Dement who was on the call earlier, is having to live in a travel trailer until his home is built. So what would be the expectation with regard to when this community could actually begin building? My understanding is the permits have all been issued except the one from the county. And then of course you have to do the final engineering, but do we have an estimated time when the construction could actually start?
Bob? Carlos, do you have any idea?
Well, yes, and Mike Davis can add to this. He's my land development director. He's on the line as well. Currently, we're finalizing with Union County Public Works, trying to get the documents required by the town staff in order to release the final approval of the project. We did get approval from Union County Public Works back on 4/10, which was submitted to NCDEQ, which has issued the permits to construct the sewer and water. But we're, my understanding is the documentation that staff is looking for, and Mike Davis has had some interactions with Union County Public Works and to town staff, Lennon, to make sure that they have what they need in the next day or so, so that we can go ahead and get this wrapped up, and at that point, hopefully get the green light to reschedule the pre-construction meeting and then resume with the limited clearing and erosion and sediment control measures and move forward from there. Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, Bob, that's it. You did very well. So we're down to Union County Public Works.
All right, Alex, if you want to get back to the your buffering explanation.
Yes, sir. Director Hare, do you mind walking us through this, please, ma'am?
Absolutely. This project was approved through the conditional zoning process. One of the conditions was that a 30-foot buffer be provided between Stevens Mill and this proposed project. But there's one of the things in that condition stated that they would leave existing vegetation there. But it also, our ordinance also requires that that buffer be enhanced. And there's some specific plantings that will be required. There's going to need to be 6 evergreens planted every 100 feet, canopy trees at a ratio of 3 per 100 feet, understory trees at 5 per 100, and shrubs at 25 per 100. So these will be planted by the applicant within that buffer area. They are also proposing to plant on top of that retaining wall on both of those tiers. And we have an exhibit that we can show you that gives you an idea of the trees that are existing and then the vegetation that will be planted. And I also wanted to remind council that condition number 14 of that approval required that EPCON work with the applicant, or excuse me, the adjacent property owners of the Stevens Mill subdivision where they border the property on providing either additional evergreen or a uniform privacy fence. That was going to be left up to the homeowners. And that's something that will still need to be done. But I do want to point out in this area where this retaining wall exists, basically they're getting the fence in the form of that retaining wall, and then they can add vegetation to that. So in essence, they would have, you know, hopefully the wall and the landscaping in those areas. Alex, if you want to advance to the next slide. This shows the landscaping behind lots. I believe it's 41, 42, and then up to 105 and 106. In green, that's the tree survey that was done by EPCON that shows you the existing trees out there that were saved. The other symbols basically are showing you what's going to have to be planted. Those are the understory, the canopy, and the evergreen trees, as well as the shrubs. If you want to advance to the next slide, it gives a little bit more detail about the, here you can see behind these lots, the retaining wall a little bit better. You can see the landscaping that is going to be planted there as well. So we just wanted to show that to you so you could get an idea of what would be planted in that area.
Thank you, Lynn. Talking about the fence or increased vegetation. Yeah, that was up to the Stevens Mill HOA to coordinate that. And I don't know if Heather Pugh's on the call or not, or Rocky. Any way to?
I'm on.
Oh, you're on, Heather?
I'm on, yes. And we haven't coordinated it yet. Bob Cardos was going to reach back out when we were to that point of coordination. And then we're going to have a meeting at our shelter with all the homeowners that will be affected.
Okay.
I think we're waiting for permit.
Okay.
EPCON's intent is to reach out to Stevens Mill within 90 days of the time that we resume site development work. That'll give us an opportunity to finish up the limited clearing, get the erosion control measures in place, and to allow the Stevens Mill residents to have a better idea of what they're going to see behind their house in order to be able to choose whether they want the privacy fence or the landscaping. And our intent is to put up a sample of each so that they can see that.
All righty, Heather and Bob, thank you all.
You're
for that
welcome.
Update. Yeah. All right.
Wyatt, can I ask one question?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, you have a group of us here actually in my living room, so that's why I put Stevens Mill Crew. So does it have to be, when the selection comes in as either vegetation or fence, does it have to be one or the other, or can it be both?
Well, I'll ask, why would y'all want it to be both? I would thought y'all might want it to be uniform.
Well, I'm just thinking of the houses that have the retaining wall in their backyard.
Are you asking to be
also,
able to fix that?
The house.
Or are you asking for more vegetation yeah. and the fence for everybody?
No. Will the individual homeowners be able to select if they want a fence or vegetation? Not and or vegetation.
Right.
And some of the homeowners already have fences in their backyard.
Yeah, so your question is, can it be a mixture? Some homeowners want vegetation and some want the fence. Correct?
Correct.
All right. Well, that'd be a question for Bob Cardos and Mike Davis, I believe.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. EPCON's understanding, our understanding is that the homeowners that back to the property line, the adjacent property line with Stevens Mill, would have the choice between picking between the 6-foot privacy fence or the landscaping. We've actually have had discussions with town staff since those approvals. We actually believe that it may look better and more uniform if we did both, if we had the privacy fence, often that with the landscaping on the Stevens Mill side of the fence. And we are willing to consider that if that's something that's possible. That would provide, we believe, additional privacy for both our future homeowners as well as the residents of Stevens Mill.
All right. Well, I'll
okay,
let.
Great.
Yep. Yeah, Bob, I appreciate that. And I'll let you continue your negotiations with Heather and the Stevens Mill HOA then. And, you know, if we need to help, we will. Thank you, Bob.
May I ask a question, please? This is Peggy Booth. I back up to the property. Where is this fence supposed to be put? There's been some question of, is it going to be on our property line or is it going to be back further?
I believe I can answer. This is Bob Cardos with EPCON. The fence will be located near the property line, but it will have to be far enough back to allow for the landscaping and vegetation that we're adding. So because of topography and because of existing trees, we don't anticipate that that fence will be a straight line. That fence will have to meander and jog in and out, but we would anticipate that it'll be somewhere between 5 and 15 feet from the property line, depending on the natural topography that we're dealing with there. For those that want a fence, or if it's decided by the Stevens Mill HOA and the town of Stallings, if they want us to install the fence wherever it's practical to be able to install.
Okay, I have one other, wait a minute, can you hear me?
Yeah, Peggy.
Yes.
Okay, one other question I have. In the area behind our house that is included in the 30 feet where the ribbons and things have been tied on trees. We have several dead trees. Is that something that EPCON is willing to deal with, or are we just going to live with dead trees and natural looking whatever?
EPCON's intent is, you know, any trees located on our property that are currently on our property, if there is a tree that provides a potential hazard to an existing house, what we don't want to do is go in there, do the limited clearing, and then be in a situation where There's an existing tree in the buffer that could potentially fall and create a safety hazard for an existing residence and cause damage to their home. If that was the case, we would then have discussions and dialogue with the town staff, which I would anticipate that they would get the county arborist involved. And if there was a dead tree within that buffer area, typically we would remove a tree if it's a safety hazard. Otherwise, it would be left natural as nature intended, or if a tree was further back and was not a safety hazard but fell, it would be left on the ground. The natural areas are not intended to be maintained or manicured. They are intended to be left natural, but obviously we don't want a safety hazard for any of our residents or a neighboring resident.
Well, we have had at least four trees break off or uproot in the last, probably 2 or 3 weeks. In fact, one lady's house was hit by a tree. So I just, want to be sure that we're covering our bases on that.
Yeah, the intent is, as we get ready to resume construction and we have a pre-construction meeting to go ahead and make sure that all the construction personnel have the instructions on what they need to be doing, the areas that they're allowed to clear, the areas that they need to be protecting. And we're doing that particular work, getting ready to install the erosion sediment control measures. At that time, EPCON staff will walk the property line, and any areas of concern, we will then identify and have the dialogue with the town of Stallings and the county arborist to determine the appropriate action. Sometimes the arborist may say that a particular tree just needs to be fertilized or pruned back. In other cases, they may want the tree removed. Typically, we don't remove stumps because you don't want to be in there with large equipment disturbing the natural areas and causing damage to other potential trees and their root system. So we would work with the town and the county arborist addressing those on an individual basis.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
Reasonable.
All right, Alex, any other, or Lynn, any other information on buffering?
No, sir. Thank you.
All right, council, do y'all have any questions for staff or Bob?
No, sir.
May I ask one other question? I didn't get on quite at 7 o'clock. How tall is the first wall supposed to be? And how tall is the second wall, these retaining walls?
Mike Davis, would you like to answer that for EPCON?
I don't have the plan in front of me, but it ranges from 0 to 8 feet. We meet the UDO, and it's pretty clear on how these walls, the height, the length, and so forth. So it's no more than 8 feet.
All right. I know on the original plan, the wall was at one end to be like 18 or 19 feet high. And then it was going to gradually get smaller as it went down the row. That's not the case anymore. It's 8 feet no matter what.
Now, staff has approved it. So, again, it varies depending on where you are, but the one single wall is not 19 feet.
Okay. Well, but 8 is the maximum. I guess that's my question, too. I'm concerned for my neighbor who was to have the 19-foot wall behind her house.
Yeah. So maybe what is the combined height of the two retaining walls? Maybe that's the better question.
It's my understanding that the one closest to Stevens Mill is the higher one, and the second one is supposed to be lower. Am I misinformed on that, or?
No, that is correct, and I believe if we go back to the exhibit, the cross-section shows that. But as Mike pointed out, and Christopher, if you have the plans in front of you, you may be able to talk more specifically, but the height of the wall has been reduced and stepped going with the topography so that the lower wall does not exceed the requirements of the ordinance. The ordinance requires that the wall be more than 8 feet average over 100 feet. And the second wall above it is even shorter in height.
Well, that's what I understood. The second one was shorter.
That is correct.
Hey, Ms. Booth, this is Alex Sewell, the town manager. I've got those numbers for you. So my notes indicate that the bottom, which is the primary wall, has a range, as Mr. Davis said, from about less than a foot to about 8 feet tall, just depending on the topography. And then the secondary wall, which is above that and kind of back, that's got a range of anywhere from a half a foot to 4.5 feet.
Okay, will there be, let's see, I don't know what terms to use here. Above these walls, will there be a significant grade of fill dirt that's going to be put in?
Mike, would you like to respond to that in regards to the lots that are on the compacted fill in order to achieve the drainage and getting that water in that area to the detention pond?
I hear you.
Yes, there's fill going there. It depends really where you are in Stevens Mill as far as the range of fill. It could mm-hmm. be 0 to 12 to 13 feet, but it all varies because the retaining wall is being built. Okay. So we're bringing that area up.
Well, I have to say my biggest concern is the drainage. And I know from day one, I've only lived in the neighborhood now for less than 2 years. And I've been attending these meetings since about 2 weeks after I moved in. Is that we in Stevens Mill have our own drainage problem. We certainly don't need any more. In fact, my husband and I spent $20,000 last year having French drains redone around our entire house. We still have some issues, but I sure don't want to see them get worse. And it concerns me because anything that's uphill, got to come downhill somehow.
And certainly EPCON understands that. Throughout the approval process, as many of you on the video Zoom here recall, we've made extreme efforts to make sure that the post-detention in regards to the water capturing and discharging improves the situation from the pre-construction existing conditions. And the storm events and the rain events we've gone over in the past, we are significantly improving the capacity of holding and detaining the water, which allows us to discharge it at a slower rate, which means less flooding for Stevens Mill downstream. And we've implemented a number of measures to do that. And related specifically to these lots, you know, part of the reason in the elevation there, one is on the pads themselves to be able to get gravity sewer feed for the houses to the source system, the public source system that will be within the community. But in addition to that, the retaining walls across the back are needed in regards to be able to get the water that is coming down through those lots to traverse back the opposite direction to the erosion and sediment control pond that's placed in the corner of the site. Without that grade or without those retaining walls, there would be no way to capture that water and redirect it back to that pond.
Yeah, I certainly understand that.
We're going to move on now. So, Bob, I appreciate all those comments and the information. So, Alex and Chris.
Mayor, did we lose you?
I don't know.
I hear you now.
You're there.
You're back. Aaron,
yep, you're there.
Alex, can you turn the hosting back over to Aaron? All righty. All right, Council, any more questions for staff on this project? You know, this was just information only. There's no vote on this tonight. This project's been approved, and I just wanted to make sure everybody was up to speed as much as possible on it.
I'm good.
Thank you.
Yeah, good clarification, too.
All righty. Hold on here. All right, next up is a Divide Golf Course. Timing. And so everybody got Alex's email with his update. I'll turn it over to you, Alex, and let you explain what staff found out. And is anybody on here from the Divide? Boyd?
Yes, this is Boyd Everling. I'm here.
All right, thank you, Boyd.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Aaron, I'm sorry to do this to you, but do you mind making me the host so I can pull up this this memo and just walk through it? And as you do that, I'll just start talking. So during our conversation last time, the council asked us to kind of do some background research and really kind of look at what other golf courses do as far as maintenance goes. And how other jurisdictions' ordinances address noise as it pertains to golf courses. And so what we did is we researched and we spoke with five other golf courses in the Charlotte area, Union County, Mecklenburg County, and also in the Charlotte area in South Carolina. We attempted to contact more than that, but these are the ones that were responsive to us. And I do want to recognize our assistant manager and town clerk Erin Nichols for her hard work on this. So what we found is every golf course staff we spoke with indicated their maintenance work began at either 6 a.m. or sunrise. Now that obviously wasn't year round because obviously maintenance doesn't begin very early in winter months. But at least during the warmer months, especially getting into the summer when sunrise is about 6 a.m. They typically do that. And a few courses indicated that on a limited occasion that they may begin work prior to 6 a.m. if there's something like a special tournament or another special occasion that requires a longer day. And then also we surveyed the corresponding municipal governments. And what we found is that there was a varied approach on yard maintenance noise and when it was allowed under their ordinances. And there were basically three different categories that we found that different places take. The first was they typically allow it between 6 a.m. and 9 p.m. The second was that they allow it between 7 a.m. and 9 p.m. And finally, the third is that the ordinance might be silent on the issue. So, we also asked a number of questions to the Divide's parent management company. It's quite extensive information, so I don't think it'd be efficient to cover that now, but that is in the memo in the agenda packet for those interested. And additionally, we listed the number of complaints that the staff had heard about kind of golf course maintenance noise. Now, again, this is staff's concerns that the staff has heard directly through code enforcement. I believe there might be some concerns that the council's heard directly. So just wanted to kind of point that out. And that's a summary of basically the information that we found for the council.
All right, Alex, I appreciate, and Aaron, appreciate the research done on this. And so, you know, we've heard from, a few folks in Shannamara for and against. And, I think one of the comments that either Boyd or was it Jerry or David Taylor, is that his name, Boyd?
Yeah, David Taylor. He's one of the managing partners.
Yeah, I think one of the comments made, he said, the crews usually show up about 5:30 and they generally start about 6. And so I don't know if that was, an accurate statement, but, my recommendation is, to find some sort of compromise here and set the starting time per our ordinance at 6 a.m. So I'll turn it over to the rest of the council. Y'all can ask Boyd any questions or comments or anything else, but that's my opinion.
Mayor, this is Mayor, this is Brad Richardson. Can you hear me okay? I've had trouble listening and speaking tonight.
I can hear you fine now.
Good, thank you. Thank you. And Mr. Everly, thank you. I'm the one, I guess, who asked for a little bit of delay for this evening, just to get a little bit more familiar with the issues. I was a recipient, as several of my council members were, of some emails from residents unhappy about the early morning noise. Here's what I found. I think it could be helpful to the conversation. A high quality golf course is good for everybody. It's good for you as a course manager and the ownership. It's good for the town. It's good for the residents. It certainly is a great thing for our community. I've also learned that you guys have done a fantastic job. You brought the course back to a great level of condition. You put a lot of money into the course. Everyone I've talked to said you really have done a great job of bringing the course standards up. The two Richardson boys, my three sons played the course last Thursday. If you knew anything about our family, you guys know that's a big waste of money on our part. But they enjoyed the course.
Fun.
And they had a lot of fun. Right. They had a 7:30 tee time, by the way. Yeah. I think we're very generous with this noise ordinance. It was surprising to me that we're that generous. In fact, I think we're the most generous in the region, if not at least on paper. I think we can agree with that from the research that our staff has done. That's great, and it's really helpful to golf courses. I also believe, after talking to everybody, the golf courses oftentimes must begin operation before 6 in the morning, right? It's you got to get ahead, get the greens ready. So I don't want to overcomplicate this, but just a couple of things that concern me. 11 complaints, not 100, right, but 11 people in the community took time to call us, spend time on the phone with us, email us, and say we think it's too early. We've had experiences of that nature. 10 of those 11 live on the course. In all my research, I've found 9 that have sent me letters that said I'm in favor of it. That 9 includes 2 posts on Facebook from last fall that were sort of unsolicited in support. And only 4 of those actually lived on the course. One of them is my colleague, Mr. Schultz. Again, small numbers in the scope of that big neighborhood, but just context, the 11 actually do, 10 of those actually live on the course. I think after reading Mr. Taylor's responses to Alex's questions, which I do appreciate, took a lot of time to put together, I think we've got a noise ordinance that caters to the exception rather than the rule. So I would support the mayor in his idea to at least from a noise ordinance codification perspective, to move that 5:30 to 6, and also move that it become seasonal, right? April 1st to you pick a date. It could be November 31st or 30th. And I think what that does is 2 things. One, it just shows that we still are amenable to early morning operations. We understand how a golf course operates to some degree and how valuable it is, but it also puts a little bit of the leverage back into the community. One of the things that most concerned me was the sweeping change to 5:30 took the residents and put them on the side of the table asking for permission to sleep. And I know they've got to do some give and take. 6 a.m. is a big give. It moves from 7 o'clock to 6 o'clock. And it doesn't mean the golf course can't start operations before 6 a.m. It just means they need to do it with the neighbors in mind. I'd also agree that on the day of a tournament or the weekend before the tournament, or the day before a big tournament, I should say, an exception should be granted. It can be an official waiver through our process, or it could just be good neighbor and communicating with the HOA. So I'll leave my remarks at that, but I would be in support and ready to make a motion to that effect this evening if I feel council agrees.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Any other comments kept from council?
I think making any change here, this is David, live on hole number 12 at the Divide in Shalimar. Been here since 98. I've already explained all that to you fellow council members. You already know that, but I've never had any issue with the noise. Now, granted, I live in the middle of a fairway, not near a green, but I'm pretty sure several of the other folks who have filed their complaints or sent their complaints also live in the middle of fairways and not near the greens. So after talking with numerous golf courses, being around golf all my life, but talking to them specifically about the noise issues here in the last couple of months, or even last year, because we started this last September, you know, the divide was here long before Shannamara. Well, not long, but shortly before Shannamara and long before Stallings annexed them. So they've been operating their schedule for the duration. And I've been here since 98, so I know most of those years, the same time frame, no noise issues ever. We've never had a complaint, or I've never heard of a complaint. And I was on the HOA board way back when, and long enough to know and connected enough to know if there was a problem, I would have heard about it. Not until recently have I heard. I don't say they don't have problems now, but I'm pretty sure, I trust the divide management right now that when they say that they don't even begin to get near the golfer, their normal policy is to begin on number one, which is far, about as far from the houses as you can get, move over to 18, which is the green at least, is also away from residences, which puts them closer to 6 o'clock. Even if they're out the barn, if they get out of the barn at 5:30, they're still not on a green till after six for the most part. I just think we're nitpicking a half hour when in reality, they basically don't get out onto the golf course until, I've been told they don't get out onto the golf course until closer to six-ish. And they go around the front side first. So by the time they get the hole number 10, 11, 12 where I'm at, it's well later into the morning. So if the golf course says 6 o'clock's fine, I'm fine with it. But otherwise, I would just soon leave it alone and not try to deal with exceptions.
All right. Thank you, David. Any other comments?
Can we hear from the golf course again?
Well, I'd rather hear from council first and then so get all the questions out and then he can address them all at one time.
Okay.
I spoke to Boyd earlier today and he said that they usually don't start until six anyways. So I would be in support of moving it until six if that's what time they typically start. And then anytime there's a tournament, you know, allowing it earlier in order, you know, to get prepared for that. If you can word it in such a way to make exceptions for tournaments.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Heather. Anybody else? All right, Stephen, did you have a question for Boyd?
No, sir. I just wanted to make sure that they didn't have any follow-up comments.
Well, you know, Heather spoke to Boyd, and Boyd, is that something is Heather accurate? I'm sure she is. She wouldn't say something that wasn't accurate, but I just wanted to give
you. Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry.
I just want to give you a chance for a rebuttal.
Yeah, I mean, we did talk earlier today, and, you know, I talked to our maintenance, our superintendent and, you know, the crew and, you know, 6 o'clock we rarely go off before six as it is. I think the 5:30 was initially just to give us the leeway for tournaments and for special occasions. It's not anything we're trying to jump out there that early anyway. You know, if we have a back nine start, it'll, you know, get out to the back nine a little earlier. And we do that, you know, probably once a month.
Right. Yeah, when you start them off both sets of tees, yeah.
Yeah, either that or you start on the backside, so maintenance. See, one thing that in public golf that's a little different than private is that we don't close any days. So we have to work around customers and try to make it safe, you know, for our crew as well. So, you know, sometimes we'll start on the back, you know, to do some work on the front, and most of the time you start on the front. and you can get to the back later, as David was saying. But as far as tournaments, you know, that's an exception that we'd like to be able to do, just so we don't lose tournaments. Right. And, you know, then we could, you know, we do have the ability to mow number one, the range, or on the clubhouse, you know, number nine, you know, those are not real close to the homes. So, you know, we, as David was saying, we would do everything we could, you know, if, as long as we're not getting nitpicked, you know, on a few minutes, because we understand that, you know, they want to have a nice living environment where they live, and we want to respect that, but we want to be able to function too. And you know, the 6 o'clock, it's workable. We just hope we wouldn't, if we were off by 10 minutes one day because we had a special occasion, that we, you know, don't get harassed, I guess.
Right. Well, I don't expect you to, so I hope not. So I think, you know, I've heard enough. I think you can make a motion if you could include the exception for tournaments or special events. We're an exception to the 6 o'clock a.m. start time.
Well, Mayor, I could make one of two motions, and I'll defer maybe to you to direct me here, but we could make a motion to amend the ordinance. I was going to make a motion tonight to direct staff to prepare a revision to the noise ordinance that does these type of things after some discussion tonight. I am sensitive to the tournament issue. I do want them to be healthy. So which motion would you like, to change the ordinance tonight or direct staff to prepare a revision?
I just change the ordinance tonight. Would be my choice.
Okay.
Again, guys, can we do that? Because the way this is written, it's specific to, I mean, to this golf course, and we've got multiple golf courses. And then also because of our electronic meeting, right, we can't augment it in same night, right?
Mayor, if I may, ordinance change must be reduced to writing. So what would need to happen is that the council would need to direct staff to bring an ordinance amendment to our next meeting.
All right. Well, we need to give you all direction then.
All right, Mayor, this is Brad. I'll make a motion to direct staff to prepare an ordinance revision that resets the time of maintenance operations that would affect the residences' peaceful enjoyment of the home till 6 a.m. Something to that effect. Said much better.
How about with the exception of?
Yeah, with the provision to allow a waiver for tournaments, and that can be defined in conversation with the management of the course.
Yeah, tournaments and special events.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Mayor, hey, Alex here. Appreciate the great dialogue. May I ask a quick question to the management at the Divide, a point of just curiosity? It will help us, I think, better. The text on this.
Sure.
When you're starting early for a particular tournament, are you starting early the day of that particular tournament, or is it multiple days prior to that?
You're starting the morning of, so okay. You know, a lot of golf courses will have an 8 o'clock shotgun. Well, what has to happen is every part of the course has to be mowed and done. So when you have a shotgun, it means you start every hole on the course. So everything has to be done by 8 o'clock. So that's a requirement to make it so you have to get out early. Because the whole course will be filled with golfers. And that's a little different than usual, because usually, you know, you start at 6:30 or 7, and you know, you start at 1 and you have a little time to get to the preceding holes ahead of them. So that's where the tournaments make it a little more difficult.
That's helpful.
And that's where the exception comes in.
So Mayor, what I'm hearing then is 6 a.m. for you know, lawnmowers, that kind of equipment, and then 5:30 a.m. As an exception for start time on days of tournament. I believe the ordinance also allows for maintenance fans with no time limit as well. So we would presumably leave that unchanged unless the council directed otherwise.
Yes, that, you know, the gentleman talked about on public comments, but you know, that's another issue. So we'll leave that alone tonight. All right, so we got a motion from Brad to amend the ordinance back to 6 a.m. start, except for tournament times and special events, to be given a waiver to start at 5:30 a.m. And this applies to every golf course, you know, Emerald Lake and Divide. It wouldn't just apply to them. So Emerald Lake hosts golf tournaments as well. So I think that's it's a summary there. So I have a motion from Brad. Do I have a second?
Mayor, I just have a quick question if I could. This is Boyd.
Yes, sir.
Is it it'd be still okay for us to mow number one and areas away from the homes, correct? If it was before six, because that's not really, I mean, near anybody's houses.
I don't have any problem with it, Boyd. I mean, I don't know how we write that in the ordinance, other than just, you know, just do it and until you have a complaint. But
Mayor, this is Brad. I think that's the intent of my motion, is to direct staff to bring back a revision to the ordinance, which would imply staff would probably talk to Mr. Everly about operations. I'd only point out, we're bringing this into conformance with the most liberal that our staff found as well. And it clearly does imply that the golf course has a discretion to begin to work anywhere else on the course that doesn't, you know, come within 300 feet of a home. I think that's the current measurement.
Okay. All right. Sounds good, Brad. You explained your motion better than I could.
Your motion, just to clarify, said to amend the ordinance. My motion begins with the words direct staff to prepare a revision. So gotcha. I just want to clarify that.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Boyd, for your question for clarification. So we got a motion. Do I have a second?
Good question. How is staff going to go about verifying and approving an exception to the policy?
Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, I don't know the exact answer. Again, part of my motion tonight is to direct staff to prepare an ordinance revision. That would include some of that work, John, and I. We could probably come up with it tonight, but my guess is our staff would do it with Mr. Everly's help, could come up with a very amenable solution to that. If we can wait, I think July 13th will be our next meeting or somewhere around there.
Well, John, you're asking about how would staff verify that they're going to need an exception?
Yeah, we're just adding some complexity to the ordinance.
Yeah, that's what I would recommend is we get, I'm sure Emerald Lake and Divide have a published tournament schedule, and they can communicate their schedule to staff, and then we can post it, or they can send it to the HOAs, the two HOAs, and let them be aware of what's going on, and then leave it up to them to broadcast to the community.
We don't actually have a published tournament, you know, and I don't think Emerald Lake has a published tournament schedule, because a lot of them are in-house or in, you know, like corporate events. So they're not open to the public.
Oh, okay. Right.
So, you know, so it's a lot of time it's a private arrangement. I mean, we could do everything we could to notify the HOA, you know, a week in advance or whatever they, you know, that we need, but I'll do the best I could for sure.
Okay. That's, we can include that in there, that the course will notify the appropriate HOA when a waiver is going to be given to them for a tournament start or a special event. So.
Right.
All right. Good question, John. Thank you. Any other questions before I get a second?
I just have a couple questions. I can wait until after the vote's taken, though, if that would be helpful.
All right. Call for a second again.
I'll second.
All right. Second by Heather. All right. Aaron, could you do a roll call, please?
Yes, sir. District 1, Martin?
Nay.
District 2, Scholl?
I said if Boyd's okay with it, I'd be okay with it, so yay.
District 3, Paxton?
Nay.
District 4, Grooms?
Aye.
District 5, Ayers?
Aye.
District 6, Richardson?
Aye.
All right, thank you, Aaron. Vote passes 4-2 with Mr. Martin and Ms. Paxton voting no. So thank you, Boyd and staff. And as soon as we get this written, Boyd, we'll send you a copy of it prior to the council meeting so you can be aware of what's going on.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Mayor, will we also send that to the Emerald Lake City? Yeah. Okay.
All right, you had some questions, Alex?
Yes, sir. Just one a little bit further clarification on the specific direction. So, and forgive me, because y'all did an excellent job discussing this, but I just want to make sure we're moving in the right direction as staff. So I heard kind of changing the start time, 5:30 a.m. To 6 a.m., with the exception for tournament days. However, so I was with us to that point, but then I kind of lost us when we started talking about making an exception for certain areas of the golf course and then also setting up a waiver process.
All right. Well, what I recommend is Brad and you coordinate with Brad and David, since Brad's led the motion and David is knows more about golf than anybody on our council. So can you get with those two and then let them help draft the ordinance with you?
I'm fine with that. Emerald Lake also has areas of their course that are far from residences that right. They probably, same thing. Start yeah, there if they're going to start.
Right, we don't have to identify them by hole. You just, like somebody said, 300 feet from a residence or something like that. So Alex, are you okay? If you can get with David and Brad or anybody on council that wants to chime in with those two and help draft this ordinance.
Absolutely. So it sounds like the 300 feet rule. There's not a timeline. It sounds like if it's not within 300 feet of a residence. So I'll work with David and Brad, and that's super helpful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, staff and council on that one. Next up is our in-person council meetings. And I think Alex explained it in one of his emails. He and I talked about it. We have one meeting in July. I don't know if the state of North Carolina is going to go into phase 3 by then. I doubt it. So we were looking at the first meeting in August. But as I told Alex, unless we're 100% comfortable, every person on the council and staff is comfortable meeting in our new chambers in August, we won't do it. So we'll take a poll and talk to everybody. And then, so that's my thoughts on it, talking this with Alex. So I want to hear from the rest of council tonight.
I'm a little on the cautious side, trying to stay with a suppressed immune system in the house, so being a little more cautious than I might otherwise, but I'm fine with waiting. We don't know in that August what's going to happen in the next 5 weeks. But secondarily to this is we need to have a grand opening of the new town hall, whether it's tied into that first meeting or whether we just have a grand opening celebration, cut the ribbon and all that another time.
That's a good point. Yeah, rather state August would be the it'd be the earliest we would do our first council meeting in there then. So,
right.
And we could review it, at any time prior to August, second Monday in August. Any other comments?
Yeah, I feel like it's we're trying to answer a question before we know what the question is. So yeah, I certainly look kind of wait and see kind of scenario at the moment.
Right. So everybody's okay. I'm doing a virtual meeting in July.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
All righty. Any more comments on that? I think it's pretty clear. All right, next up is the 2020-21 budget. So I'll turn it over to Alex.
Sure. It was presented last time. Appreciate, again, everybody's hard work on it. A lot of hours, a lot of staff time, a lot of great council consideration and dialogue. And it was submitted, I believe, June 1st. And we had our budget hearing at that first meeting in June. And the council could choose to adopt it now, or they could choose to make some changes. So happy to answer any questions. We've talked about it at length. So don't want to take up more airspace talking unnecessarily, but here to help.
All right. I didn't have it. I sent the budget out to my distribution list, and I only had one person give us any feedback, and it was all positive. And so didn't have any criticisms or any suggestions. So how about the rest of y'all?
Well, I started the last week or when our last meeting, I mentioned what I was concerned about. And I really think that sign that we've got in the budget or have in the budget really needs, we have one opportunity to get a really good impression when the atrium opens up next summer, fall. And I think pulling that out of the budget would preclude that from happening, or would happen later. And I think we really need to have it up and ready to go when they open. So I would like to talk to Alex and a couple of council folks about readjusting the expenditures so that we can leave that in the budget and take some money from different other areas. And I think Alex had some ideas for me, and Brad and I talked about the Economic Development Committee being one possible source of some money. And Alex had some ideas for other areas. And Alex, you want to take it from there and say what your thoughts were from the idea you had earlier today?
Sure, be glad to. And Councilmember Shaw, I believe, you correct me if I'm wrong, I think the goal here in the thinking is we want to add back the $50,000 for the Greenway construction signage. I'm sorry, the gateway construction engineering work that's done, and figure out a way to do that without increasing expenditures overall.
Or fund balance.
Right. Right. Yep. Not increasing the amount of expenditures that we have, regardless of where that revenue source is from. And so one of the ideas that I kind of shared is because David and I talked about a number of things, would be to approve the budget tonight and then direct the town manager to figure out a way to add that $50,000 expenditure back in the budget, while at the same time taking $25,000 from the economic development implementation line item. I believe that was one of the ones that myself and Councilmember Scholl and Councilmember Richardson had talked about, as there might not be a need for that amount this first year. And then, so taking $25,000 from that, and then also directing the town manager to find $25,000 in expenditure reductions elsewhere. Councilmember Scholl had suggested the possibility of reducing the overall travel budget for the town, which generally, and I think conceptually, at least to me, makes sense big picture, right? Like with the pandemic going on, as Councilmember Ayers mentioned earlier, you know, we don't know what's going to happen here. And, but it's likely that at least for I mean, the first of the year, we're not going to be traveling a lot of places. So there might be an opportunity to reduce that amount. But I would like to kind of, if that is the direction of staff, or excuse me, of council, to get the opportunity to kind of sit down to talk to our staff, just to make sure we're cutting something that we should not leave in there. So again, to summarize, the proposal to achieve the goal of adding the $50,000 in there, but not increasing expenditures, you would approve the budget tonight, and then you would direct the town manager to add the $50,000 for the design work for the gateway signage, while at the same time reducing the expenditures by $25,000 for the economic development expenditure implementation plan, as well as $25,000 for the town manager to identify, and to bring that as a budget amendment at the July council meeting.
There you have it. That's kind of where I was with this, and that's how important I think the signage is to do it right when we need it.
And Lynn, by doing it by July, that certainly gives us enough time to do the design and implementation before Atrium opens up the hospital in fall or winter of 21, I would assume, correct? That would be over a year.
Ms. Hare, what do you think? I would think that would definitely be enough to get the construction documents ready. As far as having it on the ground, there's probably some issues we probably just need to work through as far as site location, things like that. But Lynn, I mean, what are your thoughts?
Yes, I would agree. I think that 12 months would be enough time to get the engineering done. I mean, the sooner we can get that started, the better. But I do think that a year should give us time to get those documents ready, yes.
And it still gives us a few months to install it. So it sounds like a good idea to me, David and Alex. So what's the rest of the council feel like with that idea?
Yep. I'd like to move forward and get the budget behind us tonight, then do a amendment in July.
All right. Thank you, John. Anybody else? Heather?
I agree. I think that sign is critical, so I'd like to be sure we get that done.
All right. Stephen?
I'm good.
All right. Can I get a motion in on the budget?
I'd like to make that motion that we approve the budget as submitted while also directing town manager to bring a budget amendment in the July meeting to add the signage and figure out what the offsetting reductions will be. It's probably a better way to word that, but that's what I meant.
I got it. I'm sure Aaron will wordsmith it for us.
Thank you, Aaron.
And then, all right, motion by Mr. Scholl. Can I get a second?
Second
by Mr. Martin. Any other further discussion? Aaron, could you do a roll call, please?
Yes, sir. District 1, Martin.
Aye.
District 2, Scholl.
Aye.
District 3, Paxton.
Aye.
District 4, Grooms.
Aye.
District 5, Ayers.
Aye.
District 6, Richardson.
Aye.
All righty. Well, that motion passes. Alex and Aaron and the rest of the staff, thank you for your work on the budget and then the council. Stephen, Heather, and Brad, I thought y'all did a great job on your first budget. So thank y'all.
Budget season is so fun.
Yeah. So.
And throw in a virus too with it.
There you go. So. So we'll have our next meeting the second Monday in July. So just remember, we only meet once in the month of July and August. So just plan accordingly. And appreciate all y'all's work tonight. Can I get a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Motion by Ms. Paxton, second by Mr. Richardson. All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? All right. Thank y'all. Have a good evening.
Thank y'all. Thank you. Have a great night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
All right.